the day Will Rogers died was August 15th, 1935. He was 55 years old, and he died in the plane crash in Point Barrow, Alaska, along with Wiley Post. What is your first recollection of how you first heard about it?
Well, we were at home in 707 Osage at Bartlesville. It was a hot morning, and all the windows were open, and we had a little fan to circulate, you know, but no one had air conditioning yet, so the house was all open. And they called on the phone and asked for Gunner, and Mother got Dad on the phone. They said, "Gunner, come down. We're getting some stuff over the AP wire about Will Rogers in Alaska." So Dad said, "Turn on the radio. Something is going on in Alaska with Uncle Will." So we turned on the radio, but nothing right away came. Then in about 15 minutes or so, they broke in and said, "There's been a crash in Alaska with Wiley and Will Rogers. We'll have more later." That was our first news. But Dad got there, and he was reading it as it came across. He called back to the house, and he said, "Belle, it is true. Uncle Will and Wiley crashed, and they were both killed in the plane crash. And we will get ready and go to California, so you start getting things ready." Then she called our sitter that we had once in a while, and she called a friend to go out and get my sister at the Girl Scout camp because she was a junior counselor for a week out there. They went out and brought her home. Then neighbors started coming, and food started coming, and people offering to do anything they could, and everybody was crying and feeling the loss. It was a real loss for everyone.
You were 16 at the time, so you understood and felt the loss personally yourself at that time.
Yeah, sure did.
This was because he was the biggest national personality that the nation had ever seen. Everybody read his column, listened to his radio programs. Of course, he was in movies and on vaudeville. Those of us who remember when JFK died can kind of understand how it was when Will died.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The world just came
everybody
to a stop.
Like he was just part of the family because he was so, well, he was so known in all these fields. If you didn't know him in every one of them, at least you knew one or two things of him. I think that's why they felt the loss like they did, almost like it was personal.
55, but he lived a full life at 55.
Oh, he lived faster and more furious than anyone. He probably lived a double life in those times.
Do you have recollection of his funeral? They had the big funeral in California, is that
true? Yes, yeah, and they had his casket out on a public viewing, and people were lined up thousands and thousands and went by all day. He actually then was taken to Forest Lawn. Forest Lawn had a mausoleum and a cemetery. Aunt Betty had him put in the mausoleum. She could move him if she wanted to that way. But Aunt Betty and the family went the night before to the mortuary, and they opened the casket for them only. They got to see him, and he was dressed in his blue serge suit, and they felt much better having seen him. They had the funeral at the Forest Lawn Chapel, and it had to be by invitation only because it only held about 200 people. There was a lot of family to take seats first. And then they had a memorial in Claremore at the airport. He had opened the airport here with a lot of fanfare. He had talked Harold Getty and Wiley Post into coming, and they had made their 8 days around the world thing. So they were very famous, and that all brought a crowd, and Will being there to open the airport. But the day of his funeral, it was double that crowd. It was so big. They had the horse with its boots turned wrong. His old friend Hamp Scudder led the horse in. Of course, Roosevelt talked on the air, and Irving S. Cobb, that was one of his dear friends.
President Roosevelt talked about Will's death.
Yeah, and what he meant to the nation and the world. It was a beautiful tribute. And all these other tributes were on the broadcast, and that broadcast went all over. Everywhere.
So the funeral was broadcast?
Yeah, and they broadcast some from forth long. Mm-hmm. But mainly, of course, over Oklahoma, they had full coverage of the Claymore tribute. Mm-hmm. Because that was the only place in Oklahoma that it was held.
And you were there?
I got to go. My friend and her mother and dad took me. I got to dress and go. Hot, oh boy, August, you know, and in that hangar of the airport, oh, it was hot. But no one ever said a word, I tell you. And there wasn't a dry eye in it.
The plane that they flew in, Wiley Post actually had built.
Yeah.
It was kind of a hybrid. He had put actually two planes together, mm-hmm. and he added the pontoons to this plane.
Yeah.
So then when they had landed in Alaska and were going to take off again, there are feelings that it was those pontoons that caused the plane to be nose heavy.
Yeah. In a seaplane, you have to take it off level and just barely gradually get your altitude instead of going up like this, trying to get it, and the weight of it brought it down.
He had his typewriter with him, of course.
Yeah. He wrote a Sunday thing ahead, so it was published right then. Then he had two other dailies that he had written because he was going to be out of pocket by being in Point Barrow. Then he knew he'd be where he could write it the next day. Those are the only times, probably, that he ever wrote stuff ahead.
Did he bring along food on the plane?
Oh, I found out how he had planned and packed and all. He took crackers and chili, cans of chili, because he loved that, and he could live on beans and chili all his life if he could get it. He had very little packing of clothing and stuff because they were going to have to sit way back at the back of the plane, almost in the fuselage part. To balance it, he and all the duffel bags were back as far as they could get.